The recording that you're about to listen to is a talk from the City Bible Forum. We would appreciate you respecting our copyright by not making copies of this talk or altering the content in any way. We hope that you find the material beneficial. If you would like more information on the City Bible Forum, you can visit us on the web at citybibleforum.org.
Well, the alarm goes off. Ba, ba, ba. And you wake up. You go to work, you stop for lunch, you go back to work. It's the end of the day, you stop work, you walk to the station, you catch a train, you go home, you eat dinner, you watch TV, you go to bed, and now you repeat the same thing all over again. Well, that was my routine when I was 14 years old going to high school. And for most of us, it's the same routine now that we're grown up. Nothing has changed. The alarm goes off. Bum, bum, bum. You wake up. You go to work. You stop for lunch. You go back to work. End of the day, you stop work. You walk to the station, catch a train, go home, have dinner, watch TV, go to bed. Now repeat. It's the same routine since we were 14, except we're more tired, more stressed, more busy. We haven't gone anywhere. If anything, we've gone backwards because now we have more debt, more responsibility, and less freedom. It's why when we think about young people, we think, oh, it'd be so good to be young again. We haven't gone anywhere. We haven't gained anything. All we've swapped is one daily grind for another daily grind, which leads to the question then, how can we find meaning in our daily grind? Well, welcome to the Legal Forum. As Peter said, my name is Sam, and this series we're looking at how to find meaning in life. And our questions will be this: how can I find meaning in the daily grind? How can I find meaning in the search for knowledge? And how can I find meaning in the pursuit of pleasure? And what we'll do is week by week, one by one, we'll look at each of these questions, see what the Bible, especially the book of Ecclesiastes, has to say about our question. And this will come in the form of a 20-minute talk from me, followed by some question and answer from you guys. And today's week one, question one: how can I find meaning in the daily grind? And we can define the daily grind as the same old, same routine, day after day after day. And in the Bible reading that's in front of us, in Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 9, the writer says this: what has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun. In other words, same old, day after day after day. What do we gain? Have we gone anywhere? What's the point of it all? In other words, the question is this: how can we find meaning in the daily grind? Well, there's an outline in front of you, and you can see there are two halves to my talk. The first half, I'll look at, well, what the daily grind feels like, and in the second half, we'll look at, well, what we can do about it. So what the daily grind feels like, and here I've got two things to say. Number one, every day feels like the day before. Every day we wake up at the same time, and then we catch the same train, same time, same platform, same carriage, surrounded by the same people. Then we go to work at the same place, same desk. We eat lunch at the same place, usually the desk, the same desk as mentioned before, and day after day. And after a while, it just feels numbing. A while ago, I broke my arm, so I had to have one arm in a cast, and I had to do everything one-handed. And let me tell you, it is impossible to do toothpaste one-handed. Try to put toothpaste on a toothbrush with one hand. You can't do toilet paper one-handed either. You just go... My wife broke her arm once, and she had her arm in a cast. So I, as the husband, I had to do her hair for her. Every morning I had to put the scrunchie on for her. And let me tell you, it's a lot harder to put a scrunchie on than you realize. So guys, go home for homework when no one's looking. Get out a scrunchie and try it. It's not that easy. The other problem with having your arm in a cast, doctors will tell you, after a while, your muscles just waste away because your arm hasn't been moving. It hasn't been stimulated. And we also get pressure sores because we're just numb to the pain. And the same old is the same. After a while, we feel like our lives are wasting away. We're not being stimulated, and we're just numbed to the pain of the traffic, of the commute, of the routine. We catch the train on autopilot. We work at our stations like robots, and we eat lunch like zombies. And did you notice I use words like autopilot, robot, zombies? They are dehumanizing words. There's something very dehumanizing about doing the same routine day after day after day. So that's the first problem with the daily grind. The second problem is this. We never seem to be getting anywhere. In Greek mythology, we have the story of Sisyphus, who's condemned to roll the stone up the hill, only to have to roll back down the hill. Then it's a roll back up the hill, and it rolls down the hill again. And this is his punishment from the gods. It's punishment. And there's this idea, if we're just doing the same thing and we're not getting anywhere or gaining anything, then it's futile, it's pointless, and it's almost a punishment from the gods upon us. Just a few months ago, we had New Year's Eve, and we would have all done the same thing. We would have made New Year's resolutions this year, for sure, I will eat less, I'll exercise more, I'll take up a musical instrument, I'll learn a foreign language. But sure enough, by the end of this year, we won't have done any of those things, and we'll make the same resolutions for next year. Year after year, we're the same. We're the same person we were the year before and the year before that. We haven't gone anywhere. We haven't gained anything. My wife and I have been renting for a while, but just a few years ago, we finally, bang, we bought a house. So we're locked into a 30-year mortgage. And month after month after month, we put a little bit back into the mortgage, and we never seem to be getting anywhere. The thing still looks the same month after month after month. We don't seem to gain anything. We don't seem to go anywhere despite or because of our daily routine. Well, listen to what the guy in Ecclesiastes says about the daily routine. And this is in the first chunk in front of us. I realise the writing's a little bit small. I'll make it bigger for next week. What do people gain from all their labours at which they toil under the sun? Generations come, generations go, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun sets and hurries back to where it rises. The wind blows to the south and turns to the north. Round and round it goes, ever returning to its course. All streams flow into the sea, yet the sea is never full. To the place the streams come from, there they return again. All things are wearisome, more than one can say. The eye never has enough of seeing, nor the ear its fill of hearing. What has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun. The writer seems to be saying what we're saying. This is the daily grind. Every day is just like the day before, and we don't seem to gain anything. We're not getting anywhere. Well, that's the first half of the talk. Let's go to the second half of the talk now. Well, what we can do about this? What can we do about this? And here I suggest two things, and I suggest these come from the Bible reading as well. Two things. Number one, enjoy the moment. Enjoy things just for what we are. We need to reframe how we see things. Maybe we don't have to gain anything and just enjoy the moment. Enjoy things for what they are. After high school one day, a bunch of us guys from high school, we hung around in the park in our high school uniform. And while we were sitting there in the park, there was an old man running around and around and around the park doing laps. And being high school boys, we stood in a corner and we formed a tunnel and a cheer squad for him. So that every time he came around, we clapped and we cheered him. And he loved it. He would come through with his arms in the air, his mock celebration as he did another lap. But hang on, what was he gaining? He wasn't in a race. He wasn't winning a medal. He actually wasn't even making any net distance. He was just going round and round. He wasn't going anywhere. Yes, but he was in the moment. And he was enjoying the moment. And we too were enjoying the moment. And a key theme in the book of Ecclesiastes, and I owe this observation to Kirk Patson, who was one of my Bible teachers, A key theme in the book of Ecclesiastes is this. We need to reframe how we see this world and see things as a gift from a good God and enjoy them for what they are, but don't make any more or less of them than what they are, a gift from a good God. And so when it comes to the daily grind, we need to reframe how we see the daily grind. It's actually a good gift from a good God for us to enjoy, but don't make any more or less of it than what it is. It's a gift from a good God for us to enjoy. I have three boys. They're named Toby, Cooper and Jonty, age 8, 6 and 4. And as the father, one of my roles is to read bedtime stories for them. And every night, I want to read a different story. But they go, no, no, we want the same story. We want the same story. And one of the ones they're asking for is the bike lesson. They're always going, we want the bike lesson. We want the bike lesson. And I'm going, please, not the bike lesson. Not the bike lesson. I'm sick of it. We've been doing it over and over again. But they go, we want the bike lesson. We want the bike lesson. And then when I pull out the bike lesson, they cheer, yay, the bike lesson, the bike lesson. In their childlike innocence, they see wonder and beauty in routine and repetition. They're enjoying the moment for what it is. You know, I'm a public speaker, and the funny thing about a public speaker is I'm not allowed to give the same talk twice. And so if you turned up next week and I gave this same talk, you'd be going, boo, boo, hiss, get off, get off. We've heard that talk. That's an old talk. We want a new talk. But if I was a singer, like Bruce Springsteen or Taylor Swift, and I sang a song that you recognise, you'd be going, yeah, we love that song, sing it again. And you'd know the words and you'd be singing along. You know, just a few months ago, Cold Chisel did a tour. One of the nurses from work went, and I asked her, well, how's the Cold Chisel concert? And she said, we wanted to hear their old stuff, but they kept doing new stuff. Isn't it amazing? As a speaker, I want to do old stuff, but you guys want new stuff. As singers, they want to do new stuff, but you want to hear the old stuff. We actually like routine and repetition. We like hearing the same things again and again. As human beings, we think we don't want routine, but we actually do want it. We need it, and we actually thrive on it, and we crave it, whether we realize it or not. We had our annual summer holiday where we went to a cabin by the beach for 14 days. And I've worked out 14 days is just the right amount for a summer holiday. 1 week, not long enough. 10 days, still not long enough. 14 days, that's a sweet spot. And in 14 days, what happens is in the first third of the holiday, you de-stress. In the middle third of the holiday, you're relaxed. In the final third, okay, I'm over this. I need to get back. I need to get back to work. I need a routine. And so we actually left the holiday 1 day early because I was just so sick of doing nothing. And even when we got home, my boys were cheering, oh, we're home again. We need routine. We actually want it. We crave it. We thrive on it. As a doctor in operations, we love routine. We want every operation to go just like the one before, like clockwork. We don't like it when new things happen in an operation. We don't like saying, oh, that's never happened before. In an operation, new is not good. Routine and repetition are good things in an operation. This is a metronome. For those of us who had to do music as kids, we hated it, but we actually thrived on it as well. It went tick, tock, tick, tock, tick, tock, and it kept you in rhythm, in time, and actually made your music more beautiful because it was in rhythm, in time. There's actually a beauty about routine and repetition, and the whole enterprise of science requires routine and repetition, that the universe does work like clockwork. We need things to do the same thing day after day in science. We always need two hydrogens to go with one oxygen. We don't like it when funky things happen, like three hydrogens go with one oxygen. No, it needs to be two hydrogens with one oxygen to make water over and over and over again. We need the sun to rise from the east over and over again. We need gravity to be 9.8 meters per second squared over and over again. Otherwise, the universe would implode. and we need the hemoglobin oxygen desaturation curve to do the same thing over and over and over again. Otherwise, we would die. There's a beauty and wonder in routine and repetition. And so maybe if we reread those verses in Ecclesiastes 1 with the wonder and beauty, and we reframe it with this fresh reading, we can see the wonder and beauty in it. And again, I owe this reading to Kurt Paxton, my Bible teacher. Just listen to how Ecclesiastes 1 sounds now. The sun rises and the sun sets, and it hurries back to where it rises. It's going to do the same thing again tomorrow. That's amazing. And the wind blows to the south and turns to the north. Round and round it goes, ever returning on its course. That's fantastic. Science requires this to happen. Each day needs to be like the day before. And look, all streams flow into the sea, yet the sea is never full. How does that happen? That's the water cycle we're getting described here. To the place the streams come from, there they return again. That's amazing. How does that happen? It's a miracle. If we reframe how we see the daily routine, we might just see the wonder and beauty in it. I caught the same train I did yesterday, and it was on time. How did that happen? I have a job in a city with a desk. How does that happen? That's a miracle. These days are hot desk, and you're lucky to get any desk. And next week, I'll have the same job in the same place with a desk. Amazing. I went to the same place today for lunch as I did yesterday, and they didn't run out of food. That's amazing. How does this happen? We need to reframe and see the wonder and beauty in the daily grind. It's a gift from a good God. That's the first key. The second key is this. We need to worship the God who's behind all of this. And here I'm reading from the second chunk of Bible reading, Ecclesiastes 3. I know that there is nothing better for people than to be happy and to do good while they live, that each of them may enjoy the daily grind. They may eat and drink and find satisfaction in all their toil. This is a gift from God. That's the first key. But it's only possible if we read on, and this is the second key. I know that everything God does will endure forever. Nothing can be added to it and taken from it. God does it, so people will fear him. Remember the first key, enjoy things as a gift from God, yes. But this only works if there's a God behind the universe. And if there is, we need to love him and worship him as well. See, basically our choices are this when it comes to the daily grind. Choice number one. You know, really, there is no meaning behind what we do. We're just impersonal atoms in an impersonal universe. Events in our life are just what they are, just events, no more, no less. And any attempt to ascribe meaning to the events in our lives, that's it. They're just an attempt. It's a construct. It's a construct. But really, get over it. They're just events, impersonal molecules in an impersonal universe. Choice number one, or choice number two. You know, there's a God behind this universe. And the events don't just happen. They're a gift from this God. And because of this, there's a possibility of meaning, wonder, and beauty in what happens in my life. And taking this to the New Testament as well, interestingly, Jesus called the Logos, the organizing principle of the universe. And somehow there's a rhythm and beauty in this universe, and this rhythm and this heartbeat and this repetition, this routine is actually pointing us to somehow Jesus. And New Testament verses are saying somehow God is using this routine to sum up everything under the headship of Christ. So this routine isn't just a day after day thing. It's actually moving us somewhere, and it's moving us towards one day where we all love, know, and worship Jesus. When I was a medical student, I did an obstetrics term at Blacktown Hospital, and I was in the antenatal clinic where I'd see women 30 to 40 weeks pregnant. And one of my roles was to get the ultrasound probe and to find the heartbeat of the baby inside. You know, I actually found it really hard. If you didn't get the angle right, you couldn't hear anything. But when you got the angle just right, oh, whoosh, 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 so loud, you wonder how you missed it the first time. And you know, in the routine and repetition of our daily grind, if we listen hard enough, we can actually hear the heartbeat of God who's behind the universe. Whoosh, whoosh, whoosh. And it's so loud, we wonder how we missed it in the first place. This is the God who allows the possibility of wonder, beauty, order, and logic. He's the God who programs the seasons in our life. And he's a God who's actually moving the universe. We're not just doing laps. We're actually moving towards somewhere one day where everything will be summed up under the headship of Jesus. So how do we find meaning in our daily grind? Well, we need to reframe how we see the daily grind. It's a gift from a good God for us to enjoy. But don't make any more or less of it than what it is. It's just a gift. But if there's a God, then we also need to know, love, and worship the God who's behind the daily grind. Our car recently broke down and we had to junk it. So my parents gave me, as a gift, their old car. It's a 10-year-old little station wagon like that. And, you know, it's an okay car. It's safe, it's reliable, it's economical, but it's underpowered, it's not fast, it's not flashy, it's not pretty to look at. Now, there are two ways I can tell this story. Story number one. This is the car my parents gave me. You know, okay, it's safe, it's economical, it's reliable, but, you know, it's pretty ordinary. It's not fast, it's not powerful, it's not flashy. It's basically just a glorified shopping trolley in disguise. Why couldn't they give me a Porsche? Why couldn't they give me a V8 SS Commodore Ute? Why does this have to be the car my parents give me? Or story number two, this is the car my parents gave me. And I know it's not a Porsche, I know it's not a V8 SS Commodore Ute, but look at it. It's safe, it's reliable, it gets us from point A to point B, and it was a gift. It was a gift. And more importantly, now I know I have parents who love me and support me, and they've got my back. There are two ways we can tell the story. And there are two ways we can tell the story of our life. This is my life. It's an ordinary life. I'm not super rich. I'm not super successful. I'm not a rock star. I'm not a brain surgeon. I haven't won any Nobel Peace Prizes. It's a very ordinary life. Why does this have to be my life? Or we could say, hey, this is my life. Now, I know I'm not super rich. I'm not super successful. I don't have a Nobel Peace Prize. I'm not a rock star. I'm not a brain surgeon. But hey, my life is a gift to me from God. And I have all I need. I have food. I have shelter. I have warmth. I have a job. And more importantly, the events in my life aren't happening by accident. They're a gift from a good God to me. And more importantly, now I know there's a God who loves me, who supports me, and he's got my back. There are two ways we can tell a story. So how can we find meaning in our daily grind? Well, we just need to reframe how we see our daily grind. Enjoy it as a gift from God. But if there is a God, then we also need to love, know, and worship this God. All right, just two questions. Can you further explain Ecclesiastes 3:14, where it says God does it so people fear him? Fear. Why fear? It seems a strange choice. So what do we mean by the word fear there? So it's interesting because in Romans, it's either 6 or 8. I always get the two mixed up because they're both even numbers. In Romans 6 or 8, it says God gives us a spirit of adoption instead of a spirit of fear. And so to have God as our Father is the opposite of having someone we're afraid of. So obviously there's a nuance to the word fear here, because in the New Testament it says, because we have God and we know, love, and worship God, we don't have to be afraid of this God. Yet somehow here in Ecclesiastes it says, hey, we should be afraid of this God. So there are nuances to the word fear. And I think what the word fear here in Ecclesiastes 3 means, it means to know, love, and worship God. It's the appropriate response to a God. It's like a healthy relationship. I guess in Australia, they've worked out of all the cultures in the world, Australia, if the culture's a bell curve, and you had a spectrum of hierarchical society versus egalitarian society, The Australian culture is an outlier. It is off the charts. It's off the grid. We are so egalitarian in our culture, more so than any other culture. I think the Scandinavians come close, but the rest of the world, they're quite hierarchical. And so when we hear word like fear, we find it patronising, condescending. How dare God say we should fear him? But all the word fear implies is there's some sort of hierarchy here. Just like students should fear a teacher, and in the Australian egalitarian society, I don't think students... No, there should be a healthy respect for the teacher. So it assumes a hierarchy. And I think there's a God we'd love, know and worship, but there is a hierarchy. We're not God. We're not equivalent of God. So recognise there is a hierarchy. He made us. He loved us. He saves us. And we love and worship him in that hierarchy. I think that's what it means. But it doesn't mean we cower to him, because Romans 6 or 8 says the opposite of adoption is fear. But God has adopted us and put a spirit in us where we can even call him Dad. So we're that unafraid of him, we can call him Dad. How does self-improvement or growing in Christ fit in with a daily grind, enjoying the moment and worshipping God? So I'm not sure which angle the question's coming from. Is it wanting me to critique self-improvement, or is it saying how do we self-improve? So I've got a 50-50 chance, so I'm going to go with this one. How do we improve ourselves or grow in Christ while we have a daily grind, enjoy the moment, worship God? Well, everything's a balance. So I think what's happening here is half of us as humans long for a bit of wildness, a bit of freedom, a bit of creativity, a bit of randomness. And yet the other half of us longs for routine repetition. So we get that tension when we go on holiday because we've had the same routine day after day at work. That's why we long for wildness and freedom. That's a summer holiday. But after a bit too much of this, we go back this way. So all of life is a balance. And anthropologists, and I'm borrowing this from Paul Hibbert, who's an anthropologist, they say human beings need two sets of rituals: rituals of repetition and rituals of disruption. And that's how we self-improve. That's how we grow. We need both. And if we have too much of this, just rituals of repetition, life becomes deadening and boring. If we have too much of rituals of disruption, well, now it breaks you. It's too much. Too much wildness. We need a bit of both. We see this in music, Baroque music. Bum, bum. Okay, boring. I'm sick of the same three chords. Then we went atonal, 20th century. Oh, this is a bit too crazy. So jazz gets it just right, doesn't it? Bit of ad lib, but there's some rules. You've got to still stay with the rules. We see it in families. So we have the same routines. We eat together, we whatever, so there's a weekly routine, but every now and then there's a family holiday, and that's a ritual of disruption, because that's all a family holiday. It's basically crisis management and conflict resolution, hour after hour. Where should we go? I want to go here. No, I want to go here. How are we going to get there? I want to walk. No, I want to catch a bus. So it's just conflict all the time. So that's your ritual disruption, and through it you grow. And even at a personal level, in terms of physical health, we need routine, sleep at the same time, eat at the same time, but you need a ritual of disruption, and that's what exercise is, because your body goes, what is going on? Why are we running? I don't have to run. No one's chasing me. Why are we running? Now, this is a routine of disruption. It'll make you stronger. Get over it, all right? So in terms of improvement, you sort of need both, and in the church life, you need both. That's why people come to church for the tradition. They want the same thing. They don't want too much shock and awe and surprise from up front. But every now and then you throw in a ritual of disruption, like a church retreat or a youth service. That's shock and awe, and what is going on? And you need both. So in terms of growing in Christ, we need our little routines as well. You know, like daily Bible readings, daily prayer, daily worship. But every now and then, go out on a limb and do something for Christ that you've never done before. I remember one time my mum used to organise and run administration for Bible colleges all over the world. And one time, a lecturer just pulled out with 1 week to go for Siberia. So we rang up someone and said, hey, this sounds really crazy, but can you go to Siberia in 3 days' time? And he thought, you know, if something is that crazy, it must be God talking to me. And so he went, you know, and that's a ritual of disruption. So I think we need sort of both. So what Ecclesiastes is banging is this drum here, because it part of us longs for wildness, but in Ecclesiastes saying, hey, this is good for you as well. We need these little rituals of repetition as well in our life to grow. Oh, okay. Well, oh, yeah, there are more. Can you say more about the Logos idea in the New Testament? Wow, okay, this is controversial. So I went out on a limb here, hoping no one would pick me up too much on this. But when this is a tension in the Bible. This is a tension we have everywhere. So when you translate the Bible into Chinese, what word are we going to use for God? Have you ever wondered that? So do we use the word... So in John 1, when it says the Word became flesh, how do we translate the Word became flesh? So do we say the Tao became flesh? And at that stage you go, oh, are we allowed to use the word Tao? Because that's got other meanings, hasn't it? Or should we invent a brand new word that's never been used before in Chinese, like the gobbledygook became flesh? Well, now that's got no meaning. So that's your tension as a Bible translator, to go new word, so it's devoid of unhealthy, so it doesn't have any unhealthy connotations, but it's meaningless. Or do you go for meaningful word, but now it's going to have maybe some unhelpful connotations from somewhere else? So John, when he writes John 1, has the same choice. When he says the Word became flesh, what is he going to use for the word? Well, as we know in the Greek, it was logos. And so what is the meaning behind logos? Well, he's actually borrowing from Greek philosophy. And in Greek philosophy, the word logos meant this is the organizing principle behind the universe. And I think he deliberately used it. It's almost like saying to Star Wars fans, the Force became flesh. That sort of thing. Ooh, okay, very edgy John. I'm not sure you're allowed to do that, but you're an apostle. You're inspired. Okay, I'm just going to trust you on this one. But I think he's somehow saying this is the organizing principle. That the second person of the Trinity, not only did he make the world, but somehow God made it for him. And you know, in Acts 17, Paul quotes it in Athens, in him we live and move and have our being. Somehow that's the organizing principle. And the New Testament is somehow saying, as much as God, the first person of the Trinity, made the world and made it for him, somehow the world is also made for Jesus and made for him. And that's what Ephesians is saying in chapter 1, where it says everything's being summed up under the headship of Christ. And so, if we want meaning in the universe, somewhere we too have to be in tune with the organizing principle of the universe, be in relationship with Jesus, but know also one day we're going to be under the, well, we are now also under the headship of Jesus, so we need to worship him appropriately, fear him appropriately, and be in a relationship with Jesus. And I think that's what it means. And the final one. wow, there are more hidden ones here. Just 1 minute. Okay, 1 minute. Sam, what's your favourite Bruce Springsteen song? I love them all. But I like how with Bruce Springsteen, no matter what the song is, you're in a small town, post-industrial America, where all the factories have closed down. But your redemption comes because you have a guitar and a girl called either Wendy or Mary, and you have a car that's going to get you out of there. And so fitting all those songs would be The River, Born to Run, and Thunder Road. So they're my favourite ones.
The recording that you have just listened to is from the City Bible Forum. For more information about City Bible Forum events in your city, or to order other talks, please visit citybibleforum.org.